kind of awkward.
A handy
dandy
built a deck, what the heck?
Just hanging out, and talking dance stuff.
Don't give school dads any dad guff.
So take a knee, use inside voices. We're talking no malarkey, tire pressure, playing catch, time up, corner, doing raids. It's your bedtime, eat your veggies. Pull up a lawn chair and open some suds. Crack some dad jokes with these dead buds. You better behave or they'll turn this damn car right around.
Welcome to Radioactive Dads. We're back this week. My name is Brett. That's Nathan. Say hello, Nathan.
Hi, everybody.
we didn't have a show last week because this show and all the shows on Adobe Radio were participating in something called hashtag the show must be paused, which means that we're standing in solidarity with the protesters out there protesting against police brutality and demanding equal rights and justice. And the point of the show must be paused was so that we can all take a break from our daily lives and the things that we do that might distract us from the issues going on out there in order to fully listen to what's being said so that we can then take that in and then do with it what we will. So that's where we were last week, and that's why there was no episode. But this week there is an episode because, in my opinion, and we'll find out from Nathan, but in my opinion, when you're given a platform, in this case, in terms of a microphone being in front of your face, if you don't at least use it to, if you don't at least use it to have a conversation, then what's the point of having it at all? And that's my perspective. Nathan, how do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think the whole point is that, especially in today's society, when it seems like whether this is a good thing or not, the people who people tend to listen to are the people who entertain them. And that, in a lot of cases, for a lot of people, is us, or at least was us back in the MTV Nickelodeon days. So, the fact that we are in the position that we're in, we get to talk to a lot of people, and we have people who care about what we say for better or worse, is a responsibility that we have to address problems that are in our society. And this is a very systemic and long-standing issue that needs to be talked about. I think for me personally, my reticence in it has always, and this hasn't changed since really the beginning, but I have never really felt like a qualified person to do this. I sit there and I look at the news and I shake my head and say, ugh, this is ridiculous. This can't go on. How are people doing this to each other? What are we doing? But I still
in terms of the injustices, not like you're looking at the news going, how can people be out there protesting?
Right, of course.
Crystal clear.
Yes, crystal clear on this. Yeah, just seeing, like, every day you just see on the news people being brutalized either by each other or in a lot of cases by police officers in bad encounters. And thank goodness, you know, everybody has a camera now, so it's becoming much more visible than it was. But you see people hating on other people, and especially on social media. It's like anything that anybody says, you are automatically just asking for people to come at you with contrasting information, whether or not that's even true information, and you know that what you are personally saying is true. It's like anytime you say anything, you're picking a fight, and no matter what, it's like, unless you're ready for that fight, it feels easier to just stand in solidarity emotionally, but not step into that fray, because honestly, it's like intimidating. And if you don't feel like an expert in the topic, it's hard to feel like you're the person to say something. But I think, much like you said, Brett, we're past that now. This isn't a thing where a bunch of pundits on the news sit around in a round table and figure this out. This is people who are sickened and hurting and broken to see people of color being treated the way that they're being treated, and how not that much has changed in the last 50 to 60 years. This is where even people who are not experts need to say, this is ridiculous. Something.
I agree.
What's broken, and how can we all fix it, even if we're not experts?
I agree with you 1,000%. And a little bit later, I want to get into how you're navigating these times while being a parent. But right now, because it's what we're talking about, I want to say from my perspective and from my side of the table here that in the past, I haven't been using my platform the way that I should have been. And I see that now with some perspective, and I literally want to apologize for that, because my silence or my just simple retweet of a headline or a video or whatever is definitely not good enough. And I want to change that going forward. And I am no longer feeling the fear that you just described, which I did feel. I had a fear of, well, you know, I don't want to get this wrong, or if I say one word wrong, I'm going to be jumped on by both sides, you know, or I won't be hired again, or I won't be, you know, whatever it is. And that fear in my mind, Nathan, I'm just speaking for myself, is gone. I am no longer going to worry about whether I get a guest starring spot on Parks and Rec or not because of what I've said on my Twitter account. I am a citizen of this world the same way that everyone's a citizen of this world. And I see things with my own eyes the way that everyone does. And I have a perspective and I want to share that. And I'm just not going to live in the fear of the repercussions, because I'm on the correct side, man. Right. And I always have been. And I always have been deep down, but I could have been even more. And I apologize that I wasn't. And going forward, that's going to change in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I'm with you. That's an apology that I think you are certainly not alone. I'm with you. And I think a lot of other people are too, because of just the fear of the unknown, the fear of being jumped on or accidentally saying things wrong, and genuinely wanting to say the right thing, but being so scared of not saying it that you mm-hmm. just scrap the whole thing. And I think as long as what I do hope that happens is that there is some kind of increase in level of understanding where people aren't so quick to jump on things and understand, like, there are a lot of new advocates that are showing up that are not as educated, that are behind the curve and are really trying. But just because something isn't quite said in the exact right way isn't like, that's the quickest way to squash this thing, you know, hopping on and dragging people down. So I hope that, and I haven't experienced it, and the little bit of stuff that I've done has been like received well, largely because I think I talked about that fear, you know, and made that known of like just saying like, look, I'm sorry if I don't do this right, and I'm really, really trying, like, bear with me, you know? And I think if we can all sort of collectively do that together, that's when dialogue starts rather than like instantly squashing the dialogue, you know?
I no longer want to operate anything in my life from a place of fear. I don't want to. I want to speak my mind. I want to say what I believe to be true with a clear voice, and let people take it in and do with it what they will, and not be afraid of any repercussions from whatever side that comes in, because I know deep down where I'm operating from.
Right.
You know? And so bring on the criticism or whatever. I'm willing to talk about it because I'm entering into it with a clear head and from a genuine place.
Right. Yeah.
And I got to tell you, I'll tell you, man, so starting last week and starting with like pausing all the shows that we do and stuff, I've been very active on social media with retweeting, but then also adding my own words to some retweets and quote tweeting. And I understand that tweeting and posting isn't enough, but we live in a time of a pandemic and I've young children and I haven't been able to make it out to the protest yet. And I'm still weighing whether or not that's something that I'm going to do. I mean, I can tell you right now that if this was not a global pandemic, I probably would have been out there for multiple days in a row already. I feel it that strongly. And I also want to make it clear, as we're talking about making things crystal clear, I want to make it crystal clear that I feel truly deep down that I don't have this perspective because it's fashionable right now, mm-hmm. or because it's an opportunity to up my platform or my standing in the world or make money off of this somehow by gaining advertisers because you're gaining listeners. These are things that I've felt forever, but for whatever reason was afraid to step forward and make my voice the loudest in the room. Coronavirus is going on. Nobody has a job to go to the next day. Sports mm-hmm. aren't on TV. We can actually all pay attention and listen. And I understand the fear of like protesting during the time of COVID because it could help spread blah, 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 blah. Be safe out there. Try as hard as you can to be safe. But at the same time, man, the time has come to end all of this BS now. And yeah. it's on the ropes. I can feel it. I think the protesters can feel it. This sort mm-hmm. of like archaic way of being is on the ropes. We are beating the S out of it. And we've got to keep going until it's knocked out, squashed, over. I mean, it's never going to be fully eradicated, but man, right. we can do a lot of good right now.
In a world where so many of the distractions have been forcibly removed from our lives, like we live in such an age of escapism, where, yeah. you know, we can look at the news and say, oh, wow, oh, man, these horrible things are happening. What's on Netflix? You know, because that allows me to escape the realities of what's going on out in the world. Because if they don't, well, gosh, if they don't directly affect me, then, I it feels better to just go do something else. We're at a point now where or you can throw yourself into your work. You know, allow yourself uh-huh. to be even more distracted by that. But being in this bizarre era of the world, so many of those opportunities have been taken away. Just the fact that sports are gone. I don't know what half of the men in the country are doing if it's not watching sports. But I hope it's this. I hope it's watching documentaries. That's what Lennon and I are starting to try to do, just to like get educated and pay attention to what is going on now, what has been going on, learn about things that I didn't know about, and try to catch multiple perspectives.
When things like this happen, when police brutality like this happens, whether it's Rodney King or brutality, not even from the police, but like a Trayvon Martin type situation or Ahmaud Arbery. When people like me and my friends would stand around and see something like that happen and kind of have the attitude of like, well, look, that's awful. It's disgusting. It makes me want to vomit, but I'm one of the good ones, you know? And so this isn't my problem. People should know how I feel already. So I don't need to say something out there publicly because people know that I'm not part of the problem, right?
Yeah.
No, they don't know that you're not part of the problem. And the reflection that I've come to and like the perspective that I've gained during this is understanding that like people don't just inherently know that. And you got to say it. And you got to say it loud. And you got to say it over and over and over again. And silence or just a simple retweet of passing information on, in my mind, is like no longer good enough. And I don't want to be I'm not a part of the problem guy. I want to be hey, maybe I was a little bit a part of the problem in the past, but I recognize that now, and I'm going to fight like hell to not be ever a part of the problem in any way, shape, or form ever again.
What we have not said yet, and what still seems to be obviously the consensus among all people, is these protests are great. They need to happen. They are overdue. And the fact that a lot of people are paying more attention to them than they ever have, and people who never would have thought to get out and protest are getting out and protesting. This is good, good things. But the things that go along with it after curfew, when people are tearing up neighborhoods and looting and rioting and doing damage and undoing the message of the protesters who were out there the day before, that's not what we're standing behind. Obviously, there are limits to civil disobedience and disruption. There are good things that you can do, and there are bad things that you can do. And what we don't stand behind, or at least what I don't stand behind, I don't want to speak for anybody else, is hurting other people on purpose purpose of, you know, of personal gain. And it's not, at that point, it's not against the police. You're not hurting the police by doing that. You're hurting your neighbors by destroying their businesses and robbing them, and people getting killed in their storefronts because they were trying to stop their livelihood from being destroyed. So there is, you know, that's not part of the solution, you know, and I just hope that people realize that as well.
I will say that I agree with you 100%. Like, looting, stealing, physical violence, yeah, not okay. But I will also say that I agree with you, Nathan Kress, 100%. Looting, robbing, stealing, physical violence by anyone, never okay. And I hate to see that kind of stuff on the news. It drives me nuts. But I will say that I've gained some understanding as to why it happens, and that the frustration level has completely boiled over. And I have some empathy for that frustration. Now, I think that that's going about it in the wrong way.
Right.
But I do finally see, I have some understanding for that level of frustration, man. I mean, look, the brutality that is being protested against, the murder of George Floyd when he's already in handcuffs, and that frustration level that people are getting to, I understand, mm-hmm. like fully understand. And if anyone out there listening is still on the fence about anything, look no further than the police brutality that's happening to peaceful protesters after the violence that they're protesting against.
Yeah.
Like, these videos of people standing in front of the crowds of protesters speaking their mind to police, not being violent in any way, just literally speaking towards the police officers and just kind of like free associating, right? And then that protester is pulled from the crowd and thrown on the ground and handcuffed. And it's like, yo, how do you guys not see that this is exactly what people are out there fighting against?
Right.
So then when that happens right towards the end of the day or in the afternoon or whatever, and then things go crazy, it's like, that's why it's still going crazy. You're out there protesting against police brutality and violence by people in authority, and then you're continuing to be violent while those people are protesting what you see what I mean? It's a snake eating its own tail at that point. And right. So then the frustration boils over, and while I don't agree with it, I understand it.
Yeah.
And I don't want it to continue happening, but I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think you're right. I mean, the quote has been thrown around a gazillion times. The Martin Luther King quote, something like the riot is the language of the unheard. And in that same speech, if you zoom out and look for context, he's still saying riots are not right. Riots are not good. You shouldn't do them. But it is what happens when people try and try and try and try, and it seems like nothing really happens, you know?
Well, so that's like the thing, right? See, it feels like a last resort. It's like, what else can we possibly do? We're yelling as loud as our voices can go, and we're still not being heard. What other recourse do we have? Like, how many people have been calling their senator for 40 years? Is it doing anything?
Yeah.
And so, look, I mean, if these brands get hurt, but that forces them to listen, Yeah, I don't know. Again, no physical violence. Hate that stuff. Don't like it at all. That's right. I'm not on that side. I'm just trying to say that, like, when all other options are exhausted, what other recourse do you really have as a citizen than taking to the streets and trying to make your voices heard? I mean, you're standing in front of a crowd, you're getting pepper sprayed by a police officer who is a fellow citizen. He just happens to be wearing a badge. If you pepper spray him back, you're getting taken in for assault. But are they? And up until this point, they haven't been. They need to be.
Right.
And it just I don't know. To me, it just seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. I guess the point is we understand why it does tend to happen. And honestly, I mean, to be fair, there are some people, regardless, who are either one, what we've seen is like white people trying to incite and start things to make matters worse and to put the blame on protesters and people who are following along rather than instigating it and making them look bad on purpose. Or it's also people who are opportunists and just don't really care about the message. They're just trying to kind of get theirs. So there's so many levels and people who are trying to exploit it. And it's not even just that they're frustrated, they're trying to use it. And that's where it gets frustrating too, because that line is so hard to find as well.
Well, and you know, that's what I was trying to say earlier, dude. F those people. If you are an opportunist using this moment to go get some, you know, free crap from Target, like, then F you. That's like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
I can't be more clear than that. Like, just give me a... And if you're trying to incite violence because you're one of these, you know... Oh, these right wing, whatever. Like, then, yeah. I mean, just like F off, like completely. That's just completely ridiculous. Like, look, how many times have you heard Nathan? Sorry, this is probably going to get cut out, but hold on.
Do we need to take a break, actually?
Probably, but I'm just going.
Okay.
How many times have you heard, wait, hold on. What was I going to say? Oh, how many times have you heard, Nathan, during this from white friends? Well, you know, white people get killed by the cops too. Okay. Well, then why aren't you out on the street protesting? Like, what kind of argument is that? So then two wrongs make a right, so we shouldn't be out there protesting? So the black community shouldn't be out there protesting either? If the cops or people with badges are treating anyone wrong, then get out on the streets and join the movement. It doesn't make any sense that a lot of these... Dude, I got family that are like this in different parts of this country. I think you know geographically where I'm talking about, mm-hmm. who are standing on the sidelines and saying, well, this isn't just a black issue. Okay, well then join the movement with them then. Because, right. like... We need to say to people in authority, politicians, people who wear badges, people who are in these authority positions as a career, the message needs to be sent that just because you're in that position doesn't mean you can treat people this way. I mean, I was in a movie called The Stanford Prison Experiment. This is what it's about. The idea that as soon as you're given authority over another individual, you exploit that authority. And that's what needs to be stood up against. And that is what's being stood up against. And it's being stood up against. They're standing. Hold on. It's being stood up against in the form of Black Lives Matter. Because that's who's standing up right now. And if other communities, including white communities, want to stand up in the future, then you need to stand up right now with Black Lives Matter. So that later, when you want to stand up, they will stand up with you so that we can all stand with each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, get some right. real work done, man.
Yeah. No, that you're right. That is a really good way of putting it. It's like, you know, so much stuff is being encapsulated in one movement. And it sounds exclusive, you know, like just in the name, but the whole point is what it's about. and what the message is. And yes. That's going to come yes. back around to a lot of people. I mean, so but I will.
That, well, sorry. I was just going to say, and that speaks to what we were saying earlier and what I was saying earlier, which is that, like, I get that when you just hear it on its face value or surface level, Black Lives Matter, it's very easy to say, well, wait, why are we only talking about one race? Whoa, and you get all your feathers ruffled. And I think 6 years ago, I'm saying that even I, in the very beginnings of this movement, was a party to saying a similar thing of like, whoa, wait, why are we only talking about one? But it's a very quick conversation to understand that we're not just talking about one. I mean, we are, because that needs to be addressed. But there is there's a lot of huge issues that can be dealt with once we deal with this one. We have to deal with this one first. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening right now. I'm all for it. I want to see it continue. And I want to see real change happen, because I'm a parent and I'm raising kids in this world, and I'd like to leave the world better than I found it. Isn't that the goal?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and we're trying to make our kids better than we are, better than the generation that we belong to and the one before that. And I think are you saying we need to take a break?
Well, I was gonna slide in and say let's take a break and then move it to the kids, but I don't wanna leave anything on the field that you want to say.
Yeah, there is one more big thing on the field that I want to say.
Let's take a beat then. Let's take a beat then. Get it clean.
So are we taking a break, or is this before the break?
No, it's before the break.
Okay. So there is one more thing that I need to talk about, because this is something that affects me more personally than it does you, or a lot of people who may not have this side of the perspective. Some people probably know this, and I think we've talked about it on the show before. My dad's a cop. He's retired now. He stayed on as a reservist. And he's a volunteer. He works for free. And he has been a cop since the 80s. He's lived through a lot. He's lived through protecting businesses from riots, and he's lived through getting stabbed with screwdrivers in carjackings, and he's broken so many bones in his body chasing people through construction sites and going down in oil slicks. And he has sacrificed his body, mind, and spirit for other people. That ultimately, what I hope that people know is that is the vast majority of your average cop out there. It's just a fact. What we do have to keep in mind is, in the age of cameras and in the age of social media, where one incident can be amplified millions of times, exponentially more than it ever could in previous decades, it makes it look a lot worse, because no one wants to post a video of cops saving people's lives and stopping robberies and stopping assaults and catching bad guys who are doing genuinely bad things. That's just a given now. Like, that's their job. That is what they do. So when there are obviously not an insignificant amount, but a relative to the grand core of police officers in the country and in the world, when a handful of really, really bad apples does something horrible that everyone can agree is vile and evil and completely unacceptable, when the perception becomes, well, this is just how all police officers are. They are all systemically racist. They all hate people of color, and they are instantly abusing their power. That is the flip side of the coin that is also not true. It's not a black and white issue. And by black and white, meaning it's not just clear cut, this is the way that it is. My dad has been a decorated, honored, record, like squeaky clean record, zero complaints against him, police officer, for decades now. And I have seen him respect every single person that he's come across. I've come with him to work. I've gone and done ride-alongs with people that he trained with, people that he was a superior to. I've watched them on patrol. I've gone on patrol when they've gone through the gang areas and done gang enforcement. And when they've had to do arrests, when they've had to talk to people, when they found runaway kids and mentored them in their front yard. And they were all people of color that they were dealing with that day. They were 100% respectful and were looking out for their community and were taking care of people. That is their job. And for the most part, that is what they do. So what I also want people to see is the perspective of that is that most police officers want to be servants. And I know, like you were saying, that that may be a slightly different perspective from the Stanford prison experiment, where as soon as people in power have that power, they'll immediately start to abuse it. That may be true, but I haven't seen it, you know, and maybe it's true.
Well,
obviously, like,
well, hold on. Well, I'll make myself clear, though. I'm not saying that it's a given. I'm not saying it's a given. I'm just saying that what the experiment exposed is that certain types of people will absolutely abuse the power the second it's given to them.
Right.
It's not everybody. It's right. Certainly not. I want to ask you, though, have you talked to your dad during this, and what's his perspective?
Obviously, he is sickened by what happened. He saw the video. He, of course, says that's absolutely wrong and disgusting. No cop should ever have done that. There's no reason to do that. And he should have been fired just like he was. He should have been arrested just like he was. And so should everybody else who was there. So he's 100% behind that.
Do you find yourself, I want to ask you, though, do you find yourself having a conversation with him that you might not necessarily have had otherwise? And then what kind of perspective has that given you, or has it at all? Or is that even something you've experienced?
Yeah, I've started, I haven't really been with him too much to talk to him about it in all of this, but I have just started asking him what his experience was. And the thing is, because he has not personally been in that situation where he has acted with racist intent, he hasn't had to deal with that. He has said, I mean, well, and I don't know if this is going to get him or me in trouble or what, but he has said there's been times where he has had to arrest someone who was a person of color. And they said, look, the only reason that you're arresting me is because I'm black. And he's had to say, well, no, I'm arresting you because you committed a crime and I was called here by someone else. I didn't just see you walking on the street and say, hey, I'm going to arrest you. Someone else called to complain that you were doing something that was a crime. So I had to come here to arrest you because that's my job. I didn't do this for fun. You know, this is me being a public servant doing what I was told on the radio to come and do. So it's just, you know, like that his perspective is, as long as you're following the law and following the rules, then you should be okay. You know, like there, yeah. But that then is the question, is which rules now need to be changed? Which rules are a problem? Like, I know that I was kind of hearing him talking about this the other day. He's a little bit concerned, like chokeholds are banned now, basically. Like that's kind of becoming the department thing. And he was saying he heard about that, and by and large, he agreed that they're not just supposed to be thrown out all the time. But from his perspective, he can say, well, look, I've seen guys on PCP get shot 6 times and they're still running around punching people and trying to kill people. Sometimes not like doing a WWE move on them is the only way that they will stop trying to murder people. And like, you know, people rip out of handcuffs when they're on PCP. Like, they're superhuman people. So he was saying, like, that I get the intent behind it, but that can hurt people in the long run. You know, that's like, ultimately, that's risky. You're taking out the ability for us to be able to do something non-lethal that can be used to restrain people when done properly and when stopped at the right time, like we're trained to do. you know, if you're taking away our ability to do that, that person now might be able to kill someone else before, or they would get killed because we can't restrain them properly, because tasers don't do anything, pepper spray doesn't do anything, and they're like invincible human beings. So that's where it's like, there is a flip side of the coin, you know, like, and that's where so much of policing is about moderation and knowing when to use certain tools and when to stop. And what happens is, what gets on the news is cops who don't stop. They don't use the right tool for the right time. And whether or not that's with racist intent or it's the heat of the moment, where we also have to understand they are human too. And a lot of the time, if they're just got in a fist fight and they're scared for their lives and they got a call that a person's trying to hurt other people, their job is to protect the public. And if their adrenaline's racing, that can affect their judgment too. So that's where there's also, you know, and I'm not saying that that was the case with George Floyd. That was 100%. No, and this is what my dad would say too. This was murder, you know?
I think that the public at large though understands that. I think that the public at large understands the difference between a violent, you know, a violent dude standing in an intersection holding a samurai sword and a guy who tried to use a counterfeit $20 bill. You know, I mean, I think people get it. I think people's issue is like, look, you were just in a crazy struggle. Your adrenaline's going. We totally understand that. Now the three other cops standing around need to pull you off that guy so that we can all, cooler heads can prevail.
Right, like, exactly.
It's just, this moment is about saying like, to me, this moment's about saying like, I understand that your job is hard. I understand that it can be way tougher than any job I'm ever going to have ever. And I totally get that. Let's all, though, think about what we can do if we're standing next to a situation like that to prevent the worst from happening. And if that is what comes out of this, then that's good. And the reforms that come along with it. And the you know, putting more funding into different programs instead of the police that then would make it so we don't even really need that much police because we're all getting better as a society based on these like programs that can be put in place. And I think people get that. I think
the problem is
we just all need to reflect, man.
Right.
It's all about just reflection. Reflection and understanding and seeing, looking deep with inside of yourself, whether you're a cop or a protester, mm-hmm. and trying to discover whether there's some things deep inside there that you could be doing differently that could help change the world for the better. And I mean, on both sides. And if that's what this is a moment of worldwide reflection along with worldwide pandemic and stuff, then good.
Yeah.
Bring it on. Welcome back to Radioactive Dads. I am Brett Daffer, and you might know me from MTV's Awkward back in the day. And he is Nathan Kress. You might know him from Nickelodeon's iCarly. We're discussing current issues happening in and around the world regarding Black Lives Matter. Nathan, what do you find yourself doing as a parent in regards to the movement that's going on out there? And how much do you share with Rosie? How much do you not? What's your kind of, how are you guys dealing with this?
Yeah, we're in a little bit of an awkward phase with our daughter because she's only 2.5 and mm-hmm. you can't really explain too much to a 2.5-year-old, especially mm-hmm. about broad social concepts. So honestly, there hasn't been really too much discussion with her. Really, it's been more, not even 2 or 3 days ago, Lennon and I had this conversation of just saying, okay, she's not really the right age right now to sit her down and talk about this. But when that time comes, you know, what can we do and say? And until then, what can we do for her? Because I think really what it came down to for us was, if you can't talk about it, you can at least lead by example, mm-hmm. because that is a very, very solid fact about toddlers is most of what they're learning from watching their parents and how they handle things and what they do. So mm-hmm. really, it's just going to have to come down to how does she see us interacting with people of color, talking about people of color, being an ally to people of color. And how can she emulate that behavior? Some of those things are more simple. Like she honestly hasn't really gotten into dolls very much, but one of those simple things is just making sure that not all of her dolls, whenever that happens, are all white, blonde, Barbie looking things, you know, and have just diversity in that, just to be able to show that there are people that look different than you out there in the world, and they are, aside from the color of their skin, they are no different from us, you know?
Right.
And they are people, and they deserve to be interacted with in the exact same way. So even just something as simple as that, getting that in their head, I feel like is one of the more vital things, because prejudice and racism are, you're not born with it. You know, like this, it's, racism is learned behavior. So we just are doing everything that we can to make sure that as she gets older and as she's watching us and pay attention, that she's not learning that from us, and that we're educating ourselves as well as possible in that.
Yeah. And even if it's not like full blown racism being learned behavior, just implicit biases and biases that you're unaware of, like little subtle things that you don't even really recognize right away, that is learned behavior, that is part of the problem, even if it's not, you know, full blown, you're taking your child to a rally or something, you know what I mean?
Right.
There can be just little things that creep in that you're not aware of, and you don't mean to creep in, but they do creep in. And if you check yourself, like you're saying, and you just sort of reevaluate and you make sure that you're living your life in a certain way, then they will follow just by your example. I hear you 100%.
Yeah. Are you, how is it say, with your older boy, since do you feel like he's kind of at the age where you can talk about it?
Well, so a few things. I was watching CNN the other night, and they had a child development specialist. I think it was a psychologist, therapist. I'm not really sure the proper title, but an expert in the field of children and raising them and their, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so they were having this talk about, like, how do you talk to your kids about this time? And this guy was saying that it's pretty much almost impossible to talk with your children about it if they're under the age of 6. He didn't recommend starting to talk about it until they were over 6. And I hear that, but I also totally agree with you. And I think he was saying the same thing that you're saying, which is, like, if you can't exactly talk about it, you can absolutely lead by example. And then he was talking about if you feel like your child is old enough to have a conversation about this, the way that you can talk about it is by likening the protesters and what's happening in the streets to what happens in your child's life, which is, you know, if your child says, why are people protesting? Why are people marching? Why are people yelling at police officers? It's a tough question to answer as a parent. And his recommendation was to answer it by saying, well, people are very angry about something that's going on in the world. And the way that they voice that anger is by demonstrating and speaking truth to power. And, like, for instance, do you remember when you want a cookie and I tell you you can't have a cookie, but you really, really want a cookie and you start screaming at me and because you don't have another outlet, and then we have to have a conversation. That's what this is. People are very angry and they're yelling because some people don't get any cookies and haven't had cookies for a really long time and don't get as many cookies, and they're very upset about it. And it sounds silly and it sounds childish, but you know, this is an African-American child development specialist this is his recommendation, and he put it much better than I did, and I got a lot out of it. And you know, you can look it up and go find it out there. But so my boy he's 5 and a half, well, a little less than 5 and a half. Well, actually almost exactly 5 and a half. So he's right under that 6-year-old cutoff that this expert was recommending. But I will say that I told the story on this show that he has brought up race sort of only one time so far in his life. And it was because one of the teachers at his little preschool is black, and he was curious one day at home as to why Miss G is her name. He was wondering why Miss G's face is brown, or he kept saying, why is her head brown?
Yeah.
He didn't have the proper vocabulary.
Yeah.
And I remember we just looked down at him and we said, because that's how some people are made. And that was it. And that was it. I don't know if that was the right answer. I don't know if it was the wrong answer. That was the answer we gave him. And that was almost over 6 months ago, and it's never come up again.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There's definitely a bigger conversation coming. The conversation needs to constantly be happening, constantly yeah. evolving. But I think for now, just leading by example, you know,
yeah.
using the platforms we've been given to try to help bring about change. Having conversations with friends and family, like the conversation that we're having right now. I've had so many conversations off of microphones with friends and family in which in years past, I might've just sort of like let them say whatever they were wanting to say. And even though they were kind of right next to the point, I wouldn't really hold their feet to the fire. And I'd just say, okay, like, right. Well, I got to go. I'll talk to you later or whatever. But
right,
I find myself
yeah.
right now going like, well, hold on a second. Let's mm-hmm. just a second. I think you're almost there. Let me try to help you a little bit more. You know, like
yeah.
talking to the All Lives Matter type people,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
and going like, listen, I understand what you're saying there, but you have to understand that All Lives Matter, that is understood in the Black Lives Matter movement. What we're saying is Black Lives Matter this is what we're fighting right now. And
right.
all lives can't matter until Black Lives Matter. And let's have a discussion about that. And let me try to illustrate for you why All Lives Matter is so close. You're so close.
Yeah. yeah.
But let me try to talk to you, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So anyway,
right.
so that all those days are coming with the kids. I think mm-hmm. for now, like you said, it's just about leading by example and just about the golden rule and treating others how you want to be treated. And all of these things that sound so naive and cliche and simpleton-ish or whatever, you know, but it's true.
Yeah.
Like cliches are cliches for a reason.
Yeah. And that's the good thing about cliches is they are short and sweet and concise and true. So those
yeah.
are the things, those are the key words that we need to be thinking about when we talk about how to talk with our kids about a really big, deep, difficult topic. You know, we haven't really figured out what our script is going to be, but ultimately what it needs to end on is that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what color skin people have or what they look like on the outside. What matters is who they are on the inside and how
yep.
they treat people
yep.
and, you know,
yep.
the content of their character. Like you can,
isn't it amazing how all like self-explanatory all this seems, you know?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
when you start to say it out loud, you go, how does this not make sense to some people?
Right.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Can I say real quick,
yeah.
like there are a lot of people out there saying like, oh, well, you know, police are brutal towards all races. You know, as a matter of fact, like more white people are killed by cops than black people every year. Like I hear this being thrown around on social media. Right. Mm-hmm. Here's my answer to those people. Well, then join the movement. Okay, like if cops are being brutal to everybody and you take issue with that, well then jump in, then that means you're already on this side, right? Just then join the movement. What do you
yeah.
that makes you stand on the sideline? That doesn't make any sense,
right?
If you're upset about brutality in your own community, then join this movement,
right?
Because
yeah.
that's what is trying to be ended.
Yeah.
Police brutality, authoritarian, like, you know, this like militarization of, and this is me speaking, by the way. I don't know. I'm just speaking for myself now, but like, it's about all of it, man. It's about just,
right.
and first and foremost, it's about eradicating racism from the face of the planet.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Which we can do, which we can totally do.
Yeah.
It's achievable, like, everybody.
It really, like, It's so hard to get a gauge on it. It seems like every day something happens where I look at the news and I go, oh, maybe it's happening. You know, like it
yeah.
seems like
yeah.
there's good momentum today. Oh, we're like, you know, something different happened. People are starting to have dialogue. And then you know, you hop on Facebook and you go, oh, never mind. You know, because yeah. it just seems like in the upper levels. And I guess this is where you hope it just kind of trickles down. But it just seems like there are upper level changes happening, like systemically in the country, hopefully. But it hasn't quite hit the individual yet.
But it'll trickle down, man. White people.
This
love
is what
trickle
I'm saying.
Down, okay, they love it. And let me just say, it will trickle down. Like, I mean, the Minneapolis Police Department made chokeholds. Boom. They've changed the policy like instantly. Like action and this kind of thing, it works. You just got to keep going. The bus boycotts, Martin Luther King. And all that back in the day started in 1958. The Civil Rights Act isn't signed until 1968, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, it takes time, but you have to keep the momentum going. Like, I hope that people are in the streets until 2021, every yeah. day. Just peacefully, of course, like we already talked
yeah,
about.
Sure, sure.
This changes things. Politicians act more when they're afraid of not being elected again than they act just based on their own volition. You've got to scare them.
Yeah.
And they're getting scared and things will change, but you got to keep it up.
Right. Right. Exactly.
I think we've run out of time.
Yeah. That always seems to
Sorry,
happen
I'm,
with us.
I'm just, you know.
Yeah. No, I feel
the
I
passion,
feel you.
Man.
Yeah. Which is good. Like this is the thing. It's people who are feeling passion, who were either scared to feel that passion and be vocal about it in the past and are finally just saying, screw it. Like, let's do it. Let's talk about it. It's uncomfortable, but it needs to happen. And the people who didn't feel anything before, who are finding themselves shocked and outraged, maybe for the first time, you know, it's kind of a perfect yeah. storm of public reaction and sentiment that hopefully just parlays into something meaningful rather than yeah. a lot of false starts and, oh, here we go. And then, you know, something fizzling out or something else well, distracting us, some other major news thing taking us away from thinking and talking about this, you know?
And look to your leaders, man. Look to your leaders because, I mean, Mitt Romney is marching with protesters and literally said Black Lives Matter. Mitt yeah. Romney, the whitest dude who's ever walked the planet, like the most Ned Flanders, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm just saying. And he said, Black Lives Matter, word for word.
Yeah.
Anyone yeah. who's still on the fence or confused about this, I mean, come on, watch the news.
Right.
I love you, buddy.
I love you too,
and
man.
And I appreciate the conversation.
Yeah, I'm glad that I get to do these things with you and that hopefully maybe I don't know if this did anything for anybody, but it's at least good to talk about. And like you said, it's about starting that dialogue. And if anybody else who's listening has things that they want to add, especially people of color who feel like we maybe missed something.
Or yeah, totally. Points we missed 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So totally. Like we are doing our best to not be ignorant and be educated about this, but obviously we're not perfect. And in some ways we are new at this. So we're still figuring this out. But what we know is that we want to be allies. And we yeah. want to be on the right side of history on this and to do what we know is right. And whether or not we do that perfectly, you know, we're going to keep trying, but I'm sure we won't. Yeah. So please help us out.
Like with your friends and family, we're not letting things slide anymore. So don't let us slide either. Hold yeah. us accountable. Hold our feet to the fire. I'm here to learn. I think you are too, Nathan, and we'll keep doing it together, man. But I think for now we covered it.
Yes.
we have to go.
Okay.
We'll see you next time on Radioactive Dads.